TEM on transport, which this morning had some very fruitful discussions during sessions one and two. Before we go into session three, we just want to allow our Finnish colleague to present some work on the maritime perspective, which is a very important one within this mix of transport modes, and also perhaps just take a few minutes for any questions that may have arisen in your minds or thoughts or from conversations over lunch. That will be very strictly held to. It'll be 15 minutes max. And I should just say, if any of our colleagues who were on the panel just before lunch would like to come back up, in case any of those questions are directed at you, that would be helpful. So after those 15 minutes, we will then turn back to the agenda and start with that. So I will hand back over to Pierre Paolo, who will moderate the remainder of the session two.
Thank you, Sheila. And I think I shouldn't hesitate to give the word to Mrs. Eriksson, who is going to present on energy efficiency and low emission shipping. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair or Moderator, and Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I would also like to thank the organizers for, I'm very pleased to be here. The maritime transport is a part of the whole transport chain. Serving the society. I will now try in a very short time to give you a brief overview of the work regarding energy efficiency. The work is carried out in the International Maritime Organization. I have been participating in the work for many years already as a representative of Finland there. The historic Paris Agreement does not mention international shipping, but it is clear that shipping also needs to be a part of the solution so that we can reach the long-term objective agreed in Paris of staying below, well below 2 degrees. Around 90% of global trade is carried by sea. Growth is predicted, especially in intra-regional trade, in Asia, in South-South links. Around 70% of ships are registered in developing states. The shipping sector's share of global GHG emissions is nearly 3%, but an increase of 50 to 250% is predicted by 2050 if effective measures are not taken. So what should we do? To me, we need three things. We need globally harmonized rules for international shipping to reduce emissions. We need innovation to develop cleaner and climate resilient technologies, including use of digitalization as a tool to optimize performance. We need alternative fuels, and we need to create and ensure enabling environments for the energy efficient technologies and practices to be absorbed worldwide. Regarding globally harmonized rules, we should agree on them in the IMO in line with the overall objective agreed by the global community in Paris. IMO is the UN specialized agency for regulating shipping with its 171 member states. IMO has already in 2011 agreed on mandatory rules on energy efficiency. The Energy Efficiency Design Index, EEDI, is applicable to all new ships in international trade, irrespective of flag. And that was a very, very important decision made by IMO in 2011. All new ships built after 2025 will be 30% more energy efficient than ships today. And about the further measures in IMO in relation to reducing GHG emission from shipping, in April this year, the Marine Environment Protection Committee approved a mandatory data collection system for fuel consumption with final adoption in the autumn. The system will produce valuable information for further decision making. The committee endorsed its previous three-step approach in dealing with CO2 emissions, first collection of data, then analysis, and on that basis consideration of further steps. The committee agreed to hold an in-depth discussion at the next session in October on the development of further work. Then, of course, research and development and innovation are fundamental areas to focus on in enhancing energy-efficient and low-emission shipping. Bearing in mind the long life cycle of a ship, which can be 20 to 30 years, it is also important to look at the present fleet. I have some slides here. They are available at the website, but I won't go through them here because there is only a short time for me here. So what I would like to highlight is digitalization, which provides for shipping also a very valuable tool to increase efficiency. And also this morning, digitalization was referred to in many presentations. It's also a tool for the whole logistic chain in transportation of passengers and goods. And there are already very encouraging examples of collecting and analyzing data from ships, data that has been used to create software tools to optimize ships' performance, reduce fuel consumption and emissions. Remote maintenance of ships is also possible today. All these tools reduce operating costs and can fairly easily be installed also on existing ships, which makes it very important. Furthermore, digitalization can help increase the efficiency of the whole transport chain, including port calls. The future is about eco-shipping and eco-logistics, and here our paths meet very closely. So I appreciate very much that I could be here today, because we can't only talk about the different transport modes separately from each other. They form a whole logistic chain, so we should see how to work together and make the world a better place. Then my third point, which is really my favorite subject. It's the need to work together to ensure that enabling environments are created for energy-efficient technologies and practices to be absorbed worldwide, and also for the implementation of the rules and with a focus on capacity building. The maritime industry is mainly driven by the private sector. A lot is going on already. And in IMO, we have agreed to promote and provide technical assistance and promote cooperation in the field of technology, cooperation and transfer, especially to developing states. IMO has taken very valuable steps in this field, and Finland will continue to give its strong support to those activities. There is the IMO Technical Cooperation Programme, the UNDP JEF IMO Global Maritime Energy Efficiency Partnership Project with 10 pilot countries, all coming from the developing states, a global network of regional maritime technology cooperation centers will be set up this year with the IMO in lead and funding from the European Union. The IMO World Maritime University is also an important partner. Postgraduate students study in the university. They are all future maritime leaders and decision makers. Ladies and gentlemen, We will succeed when we work together, building global partnerships. I think it's very important that we bring together policymakers, regulators, business, finance, education, research and development, as here today also, developing technology, new innovations, focusing on capacity building. The contribution of all actors is important. Let's work together. Let's learn from each other. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we can open the floor for comments or questions. Just before that, I would like to remind you all that there's another sector that falls out of the Paris Agreement and has also submitted information for this event. And that's the case of aviation. So there's a presentation also from ICAO, which has been uploaded to the website, from what I understand, and outline solution for international aviation. So having said this, is there any comment that you want to make on, specifically first on the maritime sector and more generally in this section for this session that dealt with energy efficiency on vehicles. This, I think, Marie-Rose, the floor is yours.
Thank you. My name is Marie-Rose de Valladares, and I'm the manager of the IEA's Hydrogen Implementing Agreement. It's a technology collaboration, and it's comprised of 21 countries, the European Union, and several sponsor members from industry, public-private partnerships, and associations. Many countries in this room are members, including Finland. Automotive transport is the mass market for hydrogen and fuel cell vehicles, and these vehicles can play a role in the future market. This is critical indeed if we are to achieve the 2°C goal. Hydrogen and fuel cells have also been used in public transport and trucks. We are now starting an R&D task in the maritime as well. So hydrogen is a multimodal technology. But transport is not the only market for hydrogen technology. In fact, it can be used in every sector, stationary for heat, power, buildings, portables. And the infrastructure investment for transport can be leveraged for other sectors. Like electricity, hydrogen is an energy carrier. It's very flexible, and it can be used as an integrated future solution in a multi-sector energy system. So if you're not already a member, please join us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have other comments on this session? Okay, I think we should close here then. Thank you very much. I'll hand over the word to Sheila.
Thank you very much, Pier Paolo, for handling that session, especially as we stretched over lunch. So that's great. So now we're going to move on to session three. And if I can thank the remainder of that panel and ask our next panel to please come to the podium. I think having discussed so many different options for action, it's actually extremely appropriate now to have the opportunity to hear from three key convention bodies who are able to support in a variety of different ways, and we'll hear in about those ways the actions that various parties are undertaking. And here now we have representatives from those three convention bodies, the TEC, the CTCN, and the JEF, who will each speak in turn. So, giving everyone just a moment to gather themselves, I would like, if possible, now to hand over to Ms. Dudi Nengwetha-Masina, who is chair of the TEC and will speak on behalf of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheila, and thank you for having us here, and greetings to everyone in the room. I will speak on behalf of the Technology Executive Committee, and my talk will be based on the synthesis of transport-related information from technology needs assessment of developing countries, and also on the work of the tech based on technology roadmaps. I will not go much into this slide because, one, there is time, and I will also like to assume that a lot of us in the room, if not all of us, already have an idea on what TNAs are. So far, since 2001, more than 90 countries have submitted their TNAs, some countries submitting more than once because the guidance on TNAs has been evolving, improving with time, with the idea being to improve them such that they lead more towards implementation of the outcomes of the TNAs. And this week we launched further guidance, particularly with regards to TEPs. Still, this is with the view of improving. And these TNAs have been identifying a number of technology priorities. 41% of the TNA so far are prioritizing the energy sector, including transport within the TNAs. And out of that, more than 25% of the countries prioritize technologies relating to fuel switching, and also to modal shifts. If we look at the graph that we see there, we see that how the different priorities went about. And during the term, I see a lot of what we have been talking about relating to what is coming here. We've talked about hydrogen as a fuel, which is fuel switching. We've talked about different modes of transport, including the bicycles. We've talked about energy efficiency. We've talked about infrastructure, including bus and bicycle lanes. And I find some of the issues that we have talked about to be also relevant to behavioral change. For instance, we were talking about dealing with issues of poverty and so on. And in my mind, while such modes such as bicycles have additional core benefits, including health, there's also a status issue within most developing countries that needs to be dealt with and have the associated behavioral change in order for people to move into that one. Also, like we looked at what actions have been identified, and there are a number of actions. There's policy, law, and regulatory. There's infrastructure, which I've already talked about, and fuel switching, and both for public transport and individual transport. There are technical and emission efficiency issues. There's also information on awareness and on other. And when we look at this, we see that they're in intelligent transport systems under other. And if you do an analysis of this, you find that there are interlinkages. For instance, when you are talking about infrastructure, you are talking about signboards, you are talking about creation of backup synthesis in case of interrupted power supply. These are some of the issues where you can have interlinkages with intelligent transport systems that we have come up with. Now, having talked about this, there are core benefits of using the TNA process, which we are talking about having how we can link it up with INDCs, and how mitigation transport technologies can support national economic and social and environmental goals. And in the past, I think 2013, the tech also prepared a brief on possible integration of the TNA process with the NAMA and NAP process, in which case, for our purposes here, the NAMA process is the more relevant as it talks to mitigation. And now, going into the next stage, where we are talking about the technology roadmaps now. The technology roadmap is a planning tool, and it's a very essential planning tool. We find that it can help in making sure that these technologies the planning process goes well. And I think in one of the presentations today, we saw a roadmap to one of the technologies, and this is something that we would encourage developing countries to take into consideration. We do have also a brief that was prepared in 2013 concerning this. And there we had an analysis of about 159 technology roadmaps, the English technology roadmaps, and about 22%, that is 35 of these, were on transport. And and there are different types of some of them are listed here. I will not go into it, assuming that you can look through it briefly, as I'm already out of my time. But what I can say with regards to this is transport is one area we're having public sector, because you can have public sector technology roadmaps and you can also have private sector technology roadmaps. Transport is one area where public sector technology roadmaps are essential. We have just heard right now that transportation, you cannot just look at the different modes separately, because sometimes you need to move, like you have goods that are coming from the marine, and they need to go probably into a train before they go into road transportation until they get to where they are needed. So you need to look at the whole at the whole process, and the public sector is well positioned to look into that. And also you have different stakeholders that come into play when you're talking about Ogwe, talking about the institutions. You have your national government, you have, yes, you also have your local government. So you seriously need to have that broad overview, which is where the public sector can come in, but also the private sector has a role to play. So we do need, the technology roadmap is one tool that can be used both by the private and public sector in terms of road transportation. This is where I will end. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that contribution. That's extremely interesting. Can we move on now to our next presentation, to Mr. Jukka Jusenenkainen, director of the CTCN.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting us here. CTCN is indeed mandated by the Paris COP, especially to report to the Thames and give inputs and engage with the technical expert meetings, and we are very keen on learning what is happening here, what are the guidance which the different specialized institutions and organizations are giving us in many different technology, climate technology sectors. Actually, personally, as we all should be seeing that after Paris, we are all about implementation of our actions. These themes are most important meetings under the convention, and I would really like to see much more people and actually even interruption of negotiations while we would attend these very important meetings. CTCN is ready to take whatever conclusions are coming from these themes, and I already attended one follow-up theme on energy efficiency and tend to try to attend all the others which are coming after. Just to say what we are doing, we are taking requests from the developing countries on kind of country-driven way. They submit their requests on any climate technology issue, question, concern they have, idea, and which they wish us to give technical assistance and technology guidance so that they can bring those ideas into a implementable, fundable, bankable climate action. And this has happened in a couple of years. We are very young, couple of years old organization under the convention, and now we have over 100, I think today it's 107 requests from different developing countries. There are about 60 developing countries who have submitted these requests, and new ones are coming every week. What is maybe interesting is that what kind of sectors these requests are coming from, and mitigation is indeed about half, a bit more than half of the requests are coming from mitigation as such, and there we see that energy supply and consumption are those major sectors. What should be a bit looked at is that how many are coming from transportation sector. We have some 8% of the mitigations. That means that actually we only have something that 3 or 4% of total requests at the moment coming from transportation sector. That means only a couple of countries have submitted that one. We could a bit question that, because it seems to be that from the technology need assessment point of view, there are quite more interest on transportation and prioritization of transportation sector. So the question is that why countries are not submitting those kind of requests to us. But maybe we could see that when TNA process has now been developed also to include technical action plans, that might bring us more work as a CTCN under convention. Those few cases which we have, one is from Bhutan. Bhutan is a country which is has got an high-level political priority on transportation sector. They have major emissions from transportation, and they have to indeed import their fuels from far distance ports from Indian Ocean. So they really would like to see a transformation in that public and even private sector transportation system. So we are there, have been trying to give assistance to that. And the way how we have ended up is pretty much capacity building at the first. This is a kind of unique arrangement where another country in the region, Thailand, has provided some kind of capacity building and awareness support to different departments of Bhutan. This is an example of South-South cooperation and also example of cooperations between two developing country national designated entities of technology. As you've seen from the slides, there is a bit small text there, but you see that when planning a new transportation system, it needs so many different aspects to be taken into consideration, so many different communities who have to collaborate and coordinate among each other, and this is just the one kind of example of that kind of work. Of course, this capacity building and technical assistance, what CTCN is at this moment giving to Bhutan, is aimed at leading to a much, much more bigger investments in the future, which need then, of course, financing from different financial instruments, whether private or public one. So we are one little part and of a big machinery which is bringing Bhutan into a modern transportation system with fundable investments. Another example is Ethiopia, where we have been also asked to give some technical assistance and other support for their railway planning. We know that there are many other actors already in Ethiopia. We learned this morning that actually China is providing financial support for their light rail systems, and that investment is already taking place. Nevertheless, they are still interested in having our support on their strategic and technical planning, and we are intending to be involved in there. May I say that countries indeed are free to submit many requests to CTCN as we are their own body. So in a way, just to conclude that I think that we are in the very beginning of the TEMS as such, and we are also very beginning of kind of deliberations of what are the options on this particular sector. And I'm happy that if after year or two, I don't know how often we can convene in this kind of TEM formation on transport, but then maybe we have already a dozen or so cases which we can then discuss later. Thank you.
Jukka, thank you so much for that. It's particularly heartening to hear such a warm commendation for the TEMS from one of the main convening bodies. I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Now we will turn to the GEF, the Global Environment Facility, and Ms. Mazaka Ogawa. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Facilitator. So I start my presentation. And GEF has supported about 80 projects in 120 cities since 1997 with $480 million of GEF grant and $6.7 billion of co-financing. And there are more than 800 climate change mitigation GEF-supported projects, so about 10% are transportation-related projects. The current GEF 6 replenishment from 2014 has approved only five so far, but actually this includes the one big program of the Sustainable Cities Integrated Approach Pilot, which will support 23 cities in 11 countries This pilot will implement integrated urban planning and investment pilots covering transport, energy, waste, and other issues. So this transport portfolio covers all transport modes, including the road, rail, aviation, maritime, biking, and walking. So it is also designed to support the avoid, shift, improve transportation strategies. Here are some examples of ongoing projects supported by the JEF. The project activities include land use change and non-motorized transportation to avoid, BRT system to shift to move to more sustainable, environmentally friendly mode, and improvement of energy efficiency through development of standard and audit systems. The JEF has also supported aviation sectors with ICAO, maritime with IMMO, and the logistics sectors. So those examples are available in the presentation posted in the website. And this is also the project related to the energy efficiency vehicles. So to moving on, the JEF will prioritize the project to implement NDCs and put more emphasis on avoid, which integrate transport planning with land use. Land use planning and to avoid the needs for motorized transportation. The JEF strategy promotes integrated land low-emission urban systems. The JEF support the project, which include land use management, planning, and zoning. We also support the integration of land use with transportation planning and transit-oriented development for sustainable cities to reduce energy demand, enhance climate resilience, and improve living standards, as well as urban sustainable transportation infrastructure and systems that reduce demand for car travel. Past dependency of transport and lock-in effect should be addressed, and making infrastructure investment sustainable is needed for low carbon and resilient world. So the one project in Moldova approved last year will demonstrate integrated participatory planning models aiming to avoid lock-in in conventional urban forms. Cities and the towns are responsible for shaping and implementing policies and making new investment in sustainable urban planning. So innovative options and solutions for urban modernization will be piloted, such as enabling policies, participatory planning frameworks, support for existing incentive schemes, and financial mechanisms. So in addition to subnational authorities, private sectors are also very important stakeholders. As already presented in the previous sessions, the project of Global Fuel Efficiency Initiative is supporting national fuel efficiency policy development in 20 countries so that there are clear and certain regulatory frameworks available, and they reduce risks for manufacturers to make the necessary investment. So from this morning, we have seen many initiatives, so I just hope we can continue to support innovative transport project and program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ogawa, for your comments. That's very informative and enlightening about the JEF's approach. And yes, as someone who is organising the Fuel Economy Initiative, I feel I must say thank you very much for the support that you've given us to date. It is very much appreciated. Now, I would quite like to open up the floor to questions to our three speakers. But before we do, so whilst you're thinking of what you would like to ask, I understand that we have a representative of the GCF in the room who would like just to say a few words about the work they're doing to support initiatives on sustainable transport. I believe it's Mr. Juan Hofmeister.
Thank you very much, and first allow me to express our gratitude to all the speakers from this morning. It's been a very interesting session, and we're taking a lot of lessons to back to South Korea on this. As everyone is as well aware, the Green Climate Fund has recently become operational, and it is therefore in that context that we are very keen to first make the most use of this technical examination process, which we think is very helpful to identify barriers for climate action, demonstrate success stories, hopefully unleash the catalytic impact of these stories, and we more than anything hope to see coherence and complementarity be ensured by some of the exchange of these ideas and sharing lessons by parties and non-party stakeholders. In terms of, just want to take a moment to at least share with this plenary just where the GCF stands on this particular topic of transport. The GCF has, well, as has been noted in our reports, $10 billion U.S. dollars that we hope to see made available during the first resource mobilization period. And so, therefore, this will be immediately available for climate action to address mitigation in the pre-2020 period. The GCF investment criteria is set out to fund projects that bring the highest mitigation impacts that are paradigm-shifting, scalable, and replicable. And so in this sense, I want to highlight that we do have, as one of our strategic impact areas, the area of transport, and where we hope to see the increased access to low-emissions transport. And we hope to measure this, at least in the current results management framework that we have set, we hope to see, to measure this impact by the number of passengers using low-emission vehicles, as well as the share by transportation type in respective national transportation profiles. Though I would like to perhaps also draw some linkages that we also hope to see be reflected in our adaptation portfolio, where under the infrastructure and build resilience and built environment resilience, we think that there are also some opportunities based on some of the things that we have heard today. So just wanted to, again, encourage, as we have been doing in other forums during this week and a half of meetings, I encourage parties to know that we're keen to look for, we're ready to see their proposals and their projects, including in the transport area, and that we have a target of $2.5 billion for this year, and we're quite keen to see a portion of this be for transport. Thank you.
Mr. Hofmeister, thank you very much indeed for that contribution. So now I would like just to take questions to our speakers in this session, if anyone has any, before opening up for a more general conversation about everything we've heard today. So no specific questions to our speakers right now. I wonder then whether we might move on to the more general conversation, because I think issues will arise there where we have the expertise with us to address them. But we also have many of our speakers from earlier in today's TEM sitting with us still. It's at this moment that the grandeur of this room becomes a bit of a potential block to a conversation, I fear. We really should be sitting around a much smaller table, because really we would like this to be a conversation. But one of the things we've done is come up with two questions which are multi-part and which should appear on your screen any moment now, to try and perhaps help focus us as we go into this final question and answer session, for which we have about 45 minutes. So the first, I don't know whether it ever helps when people just read out a slide. You can all read that. I mean, it seems to me the key elements of that first question are scaling up. I think forming a robust foundation and facilitating implementation. They seem to me to be the key elements. And I think if we can consider how you think what you've heard today or your own experience in country or as one of the parties might address or give general good practice as examples, forgive me, to that first question, that would be great to hear. And then secondly, I think we're really keen for you to consider what action is needed across all of the parties and non-parties to this process in that critical early period before 2020. So what are the more immediate gains and the more immediate actions that we could undertake? And then to what extent can this TEM and the international expertise and cooperation which it embodies play into that? So I think that's the general context for comments from this point on, and I encourage everyone in the room to join in and to throw in their thoughts and their ideas. So who would like to kick off? Well, actually, I kicked off, so who'd like to go next? And there is an apple here for whoever. No, sorry, bribery is not acceptable in the UN. Of course it's not. Any thoughts, ideas? I mean, one of the things that struck me as the day has progressed is that time and again people have talked about the need for integration. And I think that integration, I know SLOCAT this morning began with that as one of the key aspects of the points they made. The need to integrate across different modes of transport, the need to talk across silos in governments. And that's certainly something that I've come across in various parts of my career, and most particularly in trying to address fuel economy, where very often one will find it's the Department of Environment in one country and it's the Department of Transport in another, and then it's an obscure agency in another which is actually running the policy and then the practice of implementing regulation. And I think we've heard several times today, most recently actually, from our colleague from the CTCN about the benefits of intra-country capacity building and sharing. I think your example was south to south. So I don't know whether any of the countries here have anything that they can proffer as good practice or ways in which within your own organisations you've managed to cut across that, or indeed to view transport as a more integrated set of issues rather perhaps than simply going for the one-off idea. So I see Denmark have very gamely turned up their flag, for which as moderator I just have to thank you hugely. So Denmark, over to you.
Thanks a lot. This is more specifically to your question on what could be the next steps under this process. And I think it goes for this topic as well as for other topics. I mean, we've had a day with a very interesting day with a rich set of presentations and touching on many areas within the topic of public transportation. And I think going ahead, it would be useful to have a more narrow topic for a technical expert meeting in order to get the right experts in the room and probably especially to also attract more participants from the outside, from the private sector. What we hear from them is that things need to be quite close to their value chains in order for it to be interesting for them. And for that to happen, I think it has to be a more specific topic where you have time to really dig into it. And then you could maybe also have a more interactive discussion where you have some specific questions that you pose to the whole room, like how have you handled X, Y, Z? The presenters could be also presenting what they've done, but then also saying we've had these challenges. Can others tell us how they've handled these specific challenges? So really trying to in the way that you frame the presentations and the questions to provide for this kind of. But I think you need a more narrow topic for that. So that's more on the process and for future meetings also on public transport. Thanks.
Thank you very much. That's a very good point. Australia.
Thank you, facilitator, and thank you for those presentations. This is just really a comment, I guess, based on what you were talking about before. It goes to your point on integration and working across ministries and coordinating policy interventions. So just before we went into caretaker mode, we kicked off the process of a whole-of-government review of vehicle transport emissions. So it pulled together our ministries of environment, industry, transport, et cetera, and they're considering all sorts of things from moving from Euro 5 to 6. Yes, we're a little bit behind. And a few other things like taxation and fuel efficiency standards and that kind of stuff. What was interesting is while this behemoth process was kind of gearing up, our Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which is a government-backed investment that is tasked with supporting renewables and low emissions technologies, had come up with some really interesting partnerships with the private sector where they basically made a series of pots of money, sort of between 50 to 120 million, available to vehicle leasing companies so that private sector, NGOs, government, those big sort of fleet purchasers could access concessional loans basically to move to low emissions vehicles. So I think that was a nice example of the benefits of having a more agile actor in the space while the clunky government tries to kind of get its act into gear. So you're interested if anyone else has had similar experiences. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Australia. I have to say, as GFEI, we have actually engaged in Australia a little while back and we have submitted to your review. So we're hopeful. We're really happy to offer whatever support we can. And it's exactly about exchanging experience. Anyone else want to contribute? Or anyone on our group of technical experts? Our two co-facilitators. I'm doing all the work here. Anyone have any thoughts on anything they'd like to feedback on the two points made by Denmark and Australia? Or anyone else in the audience? Australia just made a plea for some feedback from other countries, perhaps the Netherlands. You have something you could contribute. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I do agree with your own observation that it can be a bit intimidating to exchange just practical experiences in a hall like this, and I think that the suggestion made by Denmark to have more specific subjects and then perhaps start with a plenary session and have four or five different subjects and then have the possibility to discuss them in smaller groups with people who are actually involved with them. For instance, zero emission public transport, or zero emission, zero logistics, or financing of the lease, which I also think is a very interesting subject, and I would be interested to hear more about how Australia did that. I think that would be very helpful, and then we could probably have, because what is new for me that there are so many global organizations who can help everybody. Perhaps they can divide the subjects and moderate these sessions and also keep up all the information that others can exchange them. That would be very helpful. But for a start, I think this is very good to get some overview of what's available. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much for your contribution also. Yes, if you think it's intimidating there, you should try sitting here looking at a bunch of people who just do not want to have any information wrung out of them, no matter how hard I try. I'm going to come down and start tickling people if there's no action soon. But thank you for that. And I can't commit the Secretariat or the process in any big way, but I couldn't agree more. And it seems to me that if one was to have more focus sessions, then we really could invite countries that have specific experiences. Australia just quoted theirs, to come alongside the experts and have deeper conversations, as you say. Although that should not stop us today from getting as deep as we want to. Denmark, your flag is still up, but I'm guessing you don't mean that, do you? No. Okay, thank you. Germany. Apologies, I didn't see that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that event today. I think also it's a good basis for the discussion, and I would also like to support recent speakers to get in the next sessions more specific. I guess probably we could create something like working spaces, smaller working spaces, and I think it would be helpful to have to come more to an interactive critical discussions. I think it could be helpful and also motivating to have not only successful projects and experience are always helpful, but I guess what would be interesting would to have experiences which were difficult, what could be avoided, what are the barriers, what went wrong could be helpful, that we could discuss about it. I think successful stories sounds often very simple, but I think the issues are not simple, and everything we can discuss in critical manner would be helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. I think that's an excellent point. We often learn much more from where we find things difficult or a struggle than we do when it's easy. I can't think there's ever a partnership approach or a cooperative piece of work that's ever really easy. There are always difficulties. Now, I have my technical. I'm going to keep coming back to you until somebody says something. You're all talking today. I think pretty much everyone, actually, who stood up and spoke, referenced partnerships that they're engaged in and initiatives that they've undertaken with others. Can anybody chip up some thoughts on the parts of that process that they found to be the most challenging? If you're all going to sit there and think for a little while, then I can say certainly in my Global Fuel Economy Initiative experience, we've had moments where it's been particularly difficult to engage with industry in certain regions and countries, but where I think it's good to be able to come in as an external partner and offer some space for a conversation that might be a little bit more difficult in country. So sometimes that's hard. It's never easy to raise resources. That's another aspect. But what about you, Nick? You're looking at me. We're just about looking at me. Any thoughts? No? Ah, our colleague at the end. Forgive me. Please.
No, maybe. I mean, there is maybe some flags up still from the member states. So, maybe I want to just continue provocating you a bit, bit here. I have had some kind of almost 20 years negotiation experience with my government before I moved to be a director of one of your service providers. And all that long negotiations, I was actually missing this when the private sector and when the sectors who are doing the business in the ground would come to talk with governments. And this STEM is that particular opportunity. And otherwise, the business sectors can only have a one-minute interventions among the big plenaries. Now we have a big plenary, and we are missing the countries. We are missing the member states, especially we are missing developing countries who would have been greatly informed about the newest possible kind of innovations and solutions which have been put into use in many countries. And it is a bit miss. Maybe we are a victim of this political choice which we made as a climate community when we went to totally country-driven directions for Paris. Paris was success because it is country-driven what we got out, but that means that then there is no a kind of sector-based analysis in our hands that would guide us that where are the best low-hanging fruits on climate technologies to take them up in at least some kind of coherent manner. Some kind of prioritization, which of course is not mandatory, but could be used as a guidance. That is, of course, what CTCN is also looking, that while serving 100-plus requests from 60-plus countries, somewhere we would start to find kind of common thematic, maybe sub-regional solutions which could be put at scale. And that would be then bring us into a much more coherent effort to make 2 Celsius possible and try to save the countries from climate chains. And that this them should be offering us at least some signals and messages that where those breaks, transformational breaks, are happening, which have to be taken to developing country use, which we of course want to have. But I am also a bit of lost at how we do it in this setting, because for the normal negotiations, I do understand, because I'm coming from there, that it's very difficult to orientate with the doers and experts of the world and get everything out of there. But definitely, even these snapshots which we have been given throughout this day and will be given next tomorrow will kind of give us some kind of view of the best available technologies, which I promise as a CTCN, we will bring to the attention of our customers, the national designated entities, and tell them. So I'm waiting for the report of these meetings. Thanks.
Thank you so much for that very, very positive intervention. I know we have an intervention here. And Sweden, all I can say is you're completely hidden by France, and I'm so, so sorry that everyone else could see you from there and I couldn't. I apologise. Please do speak.
It's no problem. I just want to come in and say that I very much echo your comment on having an integrated approach to how you deal with transport. We also, from the Swedish side, have developed a long-term vision, which is very much cross-cutting across all sectors, across all ministries, agencies, and so on, to really get an integrated approach to this. And I also echo some of the comments that were made on linking it to urban planning, and also having what we listened to today, very much exchange on different policies to unlock barriers on the ground. And I was just thinking on the way forward, kind of going back to the questions, a recommendation could also be to have presentations by two bilateral cooperating countries where you have experience from both sides, how you develop a certain policy, and the experience overcoming policies. So that could be one suggestion to go forward. And I would also kind of recommend that maybe going forward that you could drill into more specific barriers and policy options that we mentioned here. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you. And Dudu, I think you wanted to say something.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to talk into some of the challenges. Although our work hasn't gone into specific details on the transport system, on transportation, even though it comes up all the time. With regards to the technical roadmaps, one of the challenges that we identified, because we're also looking at good practices and things that have gone wrong, is finding that in some of the countries, while they're doing the technology roadmaps, they rely too much on consultants, such that it then takes away the ownership. Yet what is needed here is breaking the silos, working together and making sure that everybody is involved in the planning process, in the technology road mapping, and everybody is clear who is responsible for what, to do what at what time. And then that way there is ownership and everybody is in agreement, and then it can all work, particularly talking about transportation, looking at all the modes and all the different levels, whether it's at national level or it's at local level, looking at it in an integrated fashion. Then you need to make sure that even if you involve consultants, they don't run the show, but you have the stakeholders who will actually do the work involved.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think a commitment to engage in something has to be a real commitment. It doesn't necessarily have to be resources, but it has to be data, it has to be time, it has to really mean that there's an engagement. I think you're absolutely right. Now, I think I just saw another flag. Yes, Norway.
Thank you very much. First of all, transport is one of the key areas where we have realized back home that we need to succeed if we're going to live up to our own mitigation targets. So it has indeed been interesting to see how other actors and states are preparing and implementing projects. We do appreciate short presentations. Still, I think that the process would benefit from having the chance to go a little deeper into each topic. We have been able to scratch the surface, which is nice, but For example, we could both extend the length of the presentations, but what might be even more interesting is if we have invited other actors working on the same project or in the same field in the same country, so that we can hear from the state actors, but also from companies delivering the solutions or interest organizations working in the same field, because that, I think that would both trigger more discussion in the hall, and also probably attract more experts from the outside. And I think it would possibly have been easier to bring more experts here if we had the list of speakers earlier, because there was definitely interesting names on the agenda. We are also a little surprised to see that there is a large number of countries that are not represented in the room, which we find a bit surprising. I mean, we could understand. Well, I remember that one of the INDCs said that our country doesn't really have any potential for renewable energy, but I think all the parties do have some kind of means of transport in their home countries. So I think it would make sense that there was a higher attendance here. So I hope we can look into that also, what was missing for more countries to be present. And then finally, to our friends from Tech and CTCN and Jeff and the Green Climate Fund, I think it's very valuable that they are here. I think we will also see that their presence will be more valuable when AERIS have developed more. So I think it's very promising that we hear that there are more projects in the pipeline.
Thank you very much, Norway, for that intervention. I think you make some very good points. I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that this is a very, very busy set of meetings. There are many competing demands of places to be, and that's why it's so great to hear, for example, from CTCM, but also from our other panellists, that being part of this TEM is something that they really were very, very keen to be. And I think we can be very proud of who we have in the room. I can see all of you from here, and you're a very good-looking bunch, and you've engaged, I think, extremely positively with the work. I guess the challenge is on us with transport TEMs to make them the meetings you don't want to miss, and I think you've all made that clear, and you've given us some really helpful steers on how we might be able to do that, and I know that we will take that away, and the Secretariat will consider that, and we will do our very, very best to make these meetings as engaging as they possibly can be. That is the point. I think there is one contribution from down here, Pier Paolo, and okay, go ahead. You can do it from there. Oh, no, you don't have a mic. Oh, sorry.
Just one suggestion. I don't know to which extent this is feasible for the Secretariat, but I think there's scope in leveraging from the LPAA process to give leadership to initiatives that have been emerging on transport in the LPAA framework, and then to help developing thematic areas which are more specific. I've heard a few of the people sitting around the room that suggested, why don't we go into more specific actions? And I think there's a natural interest from the leaders of the initiative in the LPAA to actually bring knowledge to interested parties in their own, to basically disseminate information about what they're doing. And so if there's also interest from countries to actually learn about more specific aspects, that could be a place where there's a catalytic process that links the two parts, and interested people will be listening to interesting speakers, and that could then develop further.
Again, I think that's a really good point, and as someone who leads an initiative, I agree completely.
Thank you. Very appropriately, our moderator, facilitator, don't give us the microphones on the side there, so it's great. I think international transport very much endorsed the idea of the proposals made for the more detailed sessions as well, and with more actors participating on the specific areas on those meetings. Of course, this is something we cannot ask the Secretariat too, but I think this is a very good idea. We work with the countries. We actually have a corporate partnership board within the International Transport Forum, and we all increasingly work with cities as well. So I think we can also help in providing these experts to this meeting on a much more targeted, and something I was thinking cities would be extremely important to have in this debate as well, involved in the future. And so we very much like to support this process by bringing these experts to these meetings. One of the questions you mentioned on the challenges often in this, what are the challenges in implement or in these processes? What we find is actually is challenging often is to bring the success stories forward. There are success stories and there are very success policies, good cases, but to bring them into knowledge to everyone and then talk about transferability of those policies to other countries, I think that is challenging from our perspective. Again, here, probably working together, we could do that. And we also hope that the decarbonizing transport project that we launched will help on disseminating and identifying those effective policies. But I would follow up on what Pierpaolo was saying as well. I think there could be some more link, if that's seen appropriate, also between the work the International Energy Agency is doing, the International Transport Forum is doing. So there are several events on a targeted sector-specific studies which we could perhaps extend the invitations to national experts and national delegates to join those meetings, not only here, but also in the ITF and IEA. So that's one idea. Thank you.
Again, thank you very much. That's a very constructive contribution. And again, some great ideas. If no one on the existing panel would like to say anything else, please feel free if you would. You're happy? Then can I thank you for coming along today and giving us your contributions? I think it's invaluable to have you as part of this conversation. You're free to leave, and we'll move on to the final part of the agenda. Thank you very much. Thanks. So, having concluded part three of the agenda, I just want to say thank you so much to everyone in the room and those who've been in the room and are no longer here for supporting this discussion, which I think ultimately we have made as interactive as our surroundings would allow. But I think also the quality of the contributions from our experts has certainly lent itself to a good discussion. Now, our task today was to bring the expertise of this TEM and the experience of the parties to bear on the implementation. I think that's very important we remember that, the implementation of sustainable low-carbon transport. And as I say, and I think we've all agreed, there's been a rich and informative exchange. And thank you for that. For taking part, for contributing across the piece. I think there were some particular issues that were at the heart of our considerations, and we were considering how the TEM could help in this crucial period in advance of 2020, very much building on the Paris Agreement, where whilst there were not so very many explicit transport mentions, there were a huge number of transport activities and commitments in and around the Lima-Paris Action Agenda, for which I think there are many people to be thanked, and most particularly, I think, the French government and Peru. Our challenge was to look at how we would scale up those initiatives and other ideas and thoughts presented here today, how we would as a TEM help to provide a robust foundation, and how we could help to facilitate international cooperation. And I think that last conversation gave us some ideas, which were very concrete, actually, in terms of how we might manage to do that. But also throughout the period that we've been together in this room, we've heard from speakers from China to Colombia, from Thailand to Finland, and from all of the parties too, about how countries are beginning to address these challenges. We've had inputs from industry, from Toyota, from CAPS, on the power of information technology and product innovation in addressing some of these challenges. And we've also heard from civic societies, from foundations such as my own, and the major groups such as the Women's Group, about the sorts of issues that concern us and what we think we can bring to the feast and how we want to see them addressed. And so throughout all of this, I've been listening very, very carefully and taking copious notes. And it seems to me several key themes have emerged, which have been recurrent, which, with your indulgence, I would just like to touch on really briefly here as a sort of summing up, by no means exclusive, in case something you feel strongly about wasn't mentioned, but then that's just a very good reason for you to engage further to ensure that it is mentioned by whoever else is given this task next time. So I think there are about four things I would point to. One I mentioned just a moment ago, actually, which was integration. And we talked a bit about that being about government and lots of different solutions. I think it's really important that we do agree, acknowledge there is no one winning solution, easy though that might be, that it demands, I think, as Slocat laid out, a roadmap of structured actions working across government, avoiding a silo-based approach, i.e. a separate approach from different departments. And I think, as UITP pointed out, it involves and needs some really serious integrated planning. And whilst I say there was no single solution, I think it would be remiss not to mention the fact that the electric vehicle electrification certainly ran through quite a few of the contributions, the SEP contribution, Toyota and Morocco. But I think one of the important things that Morocco mentioned, our representative from Morocco, forgive me, mentioned when he spoke, was that this was all about green energy too, and so we shouldn't assume that just because it's an EV, it is inherently going to be better. But and hydrogen also was mentioned, so alternate technologies too. So that was integration. I think then the second thing that really struck me, and I have to say resonates with me, was the concept that we need to share experience and capacity build. I think learning from experts and those with direct experience is invaluable, but those with really direct experience is more invaluable still. And I think that our representative this morning, Thomas from the SBI, gave a very energetic call to action that we should all be ready and prepared to do that sharing and support that sort of sharing. ITF made the point that the impact of that sort of activity could be huge in terms of country action. And I think the French City 100 City Initiative gave a good sense of how capacity building can really flow through a successful initiative and be a centre point to it. And I have to say, in our Global Fuel Economy Initiative, that's the thing above all else that we're most proud of, because I think it gives you a network also of people who've been called to arms, people who are out there spreading the message. And most particularly when it's South-South, and again, our colleague from CTCM was very clear that that was something they were engaging in. So that was my second thought. My third would be that policy matters, but you have to have patience. And also you have to do the simple things. And this was something which was echoed several times. And I thought the Chinese example of streamlined planning approval seemed like a pretty much a straightforward, pretty easy to control, although I would acknowledge that circumstances are obviously very different in different places, but that you could simplify something and make quite an impact there. Certainly we believe, again, GFEI, improving fuel economy, that's pretty darn basic stuff. The technology exists, it just needs to go in the cars. But I think someone else referred to eco-driving. Straightforward things that you can start getting in place really quite easily. But just to be aware that the big things that are worth doing, they probably need legislation, and you have to have patience, particularly patience with politicians whose timescales and agendas are inherently different perhaps to the ordinary person. And then I suppose the last one, and perhaps this is the most obvious one because it did run through everything that was said today, is partnership and cooperation. Our Finnish colleague called upon us to all work together, I think, very, very effectively, each bringing skills and experiences. But I think the example of the Colombian bike scheme, which again brought different parties together, private sector and others, was another great example. But I think also throughout all of this, it's incredibly important that we don't forget what we were told when we began this morning, and that's the objective of all of the work we're trying to do on sustainable transport. It's to enable the benefits of transport for sustainable development, access, and all of those crucially important things around our sustainable development objectives, but without the negative impacts, if we can possibly avoid them, the pollution, the CO2. And I think that's not least because of the vulnerable groups who suffer most in the scenarios where there is no access and or the impact is particularly negative. And I think of the very poorest, a point that was made just a moment ago by the TEC rep, that poverty is crucial and transport has such a key role to play in that, but also children and women, and they were mentioned here today. So there is no question that we have a complex agenda in front of us. I think those four elements to today's discussion give us something to think about. I think the contributions from yourselves about how we might try and go forward with focus are all incredibly helpful. And I think as we were reminded in Washington, D.C. last week, or maybe it was the week before last, in climate action, now is the time definitely to rouse ourselves from the fog of success, which I think is a very neat way of describing what came out of Paris, and then move on with all our skills, our expertise, passion and energy to deliver this sustainable transport future. So thank you again for your contributions to these discussions. Thank you to the Secretariat for all the work they've done in preparing the meeting. And I hope the rest of the week in Bonn goes well for you all. Thank you.